BCFM Community Radio for Bristol on 93.2 FM. For more information or to listen live on the internet, go to our website at www.bcfm.org.uk. BCFM, your radio.
Hello and welcome to the 20th of May edition of Dialect Radio. We come to you every week on the web from our studios in Queen Square in Bristol and on Bristol Community FM 93.2. We're here today from a national drug legalisation campaign based here in Bristol, Transform, who are speaking in a debate at the Kumba Centre about cocaine. We have the latest on the credit crunch, and we have an extract from Radio Free Palestine, which was broadcast last weekend on the 60th anniversary of the creation of Israel. And we go back to Luton Station on July the 7th, 2005. We also hear from ex-staff sergeant in the US Marines, Jimmy Massey, who has now left the Marines and joined a growing group called Iraq Veterans Against the War. Plus all the usual poetry, music, lots more, and this week's gig guide and song of the week from Jeff Sparks. Now for a track that reminds me of idling around in the sixth form common room 10 years ago. This is Rockefeller Skank by Fatboy Slim.
Right about now, the funk soul brother. Check it out now, the funk soul brother. Right about now, the funk soul brother. Check it out now, the funk soul brother. Right about now, the funk soul brother. Check it out now. Funk soul brother, right about now. The funk soul brother, check it out now. The funk soul brother, right about now. The funk soul brother, right about now. About now. About now. About now.
Right about now.
about now. Funk Soul Brother.
Right about now.
That's Fatboy Slim there.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
As the news of a credit crunch comes back with worrying regularity, Dialect Radio this week looks at it in depth. What are the causes and what, if anything, can we do? I'm joined now by Martin Summers, who used to be the East European officer at the New Economics Foundation. Hello.
Hello there.
So, for the man on the street, what does the credit crunch mean, and what are its causes? Where has this come from?
Well, the causes are to do with complex financial instruments, which have been created relatively recently, many of them since 2001. And they've turned out to be extremely bad ideas and have caused all kinds of problems in the financial system. But the mainstream economy has not been severely affected as yet by this financial problem, but that's about to change. So the man in the street, or woman in the street, is about to experience the consequences of what we've been watching happening in the financial sphere up to now.
Hasn't there been plenty of time to see this coming? Because for ages we've seen headlines in the papers that our national debt in terms of credit card bills and mortgages and so on is now over £1 billion for the entire nation. I mean, why hasn't people seen
this
coming?
Well, it's not just Britain that's affected by this. I mean, you're quite right that it's caused by debt. Most people in this country and many other countries live on credit, and of course in a previous generation, you think about our parents' generation, that was rather unusual. We've got used to the idea that there is credit, and that's what this bubble is all about. You know, when people run out of money, they just get another credit card. When they want to go on holiday, they remortgage their house. I mean, we've got very used to this idea, but of course in a previous generation, people would have been horrified by getting into the debt that people have done now, but we've got used to it. And of course, for many years, it's worked for people, as in, you know, we've all got lots more stuff than we used to have in this country, at least. But of course, you know, now the bills are coming in. The problems are piling up.
How bad do you think this this is going to get? Because there are an awful lot of scaremongering stories and so on. What are the worst consequences, do you think?
Well, I think this is one of the most serious financial crisis in my lifetime, and I'm 48 years old. What is really scary is that the people in charge are aware that this bubble is the biggest in history, far bigger than in 1929. There's a potential here for a catastrophic financial crash. You know. They're obviously struggling like mad to bail the boat out and to prevent this from happening. But to be honest with you, I can't see how it can be avoided given the irresponsibility of what's been done previously. I mean, we've just backed ourselves into a corner, effectively.
Does the Northern Rock crisis have anything to do with this?
Well, I mean, Northern Rock is a run on a bank like we saw, like Northern Rock. That hasn't happened in this country for 150 years. Yeah. So that no bank has collapsed in like that in Britain for 150 years. So throughout the 1930s, all that, no bank collapsed in that way. So I think people can get a sense from that of how serious this is. Yeah, the kind of people queuing up outside the bank trying to get their money out and all the rest of it. There's a famous picture in Bristol Museum of the run on the bank, which is May 1830, and you've got people queuing up in Corn Square to try and get their money out, widows weeping and all the rest of it. But I mean, that's extraordinary scenes in this country.
I mean, more houses are being reclaimed by banks due to people defaulting on mortgages and such like. I mean, are we literally going to see sort of more people out on the streets?
I'm afraid we are. I mean, we've already got a homelessness crisis for poor people. It's been there all along. Despite everybody thinking that they're so rich because their houses have been rising in value, we've not built any council houses since Margaret Thatcher came to power 20 years ago. And for most people who haven't got a big income, they've always had huge housing problems. And now the middle class are going to feel the same lash.
What do you think of the political parties in terms of what they're planning to do about it, seeing as elections are going to come up before too long?
I think they're all like rabbits in the headlights, really. They've all bought into this idea that the market's great and there's nothing we have to do about it. It just looks after itself. And so they've been caught with their pants well down there. They don't know what to say. The Liberal Democrats have come out with a position paper in the last week or so, which has got some interesting and thoughtful ideas. But of course, it's very much shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. Mm. You know, we shouldn't really be in this position. The creation of all these complex financial instruments, the huge bonuses that have been paid to the idiots that have developed all of this, that shouldn't have happened. Yeah, we should have run a tighter ship. It's very difficult to see how to deal with it once we get into this mess. We should never have gone there.
What do you think this says about sort of free market economics, which of course Thatcher pushed very strongly in the 80s, and New Labour have just continued for the last 10 years?
Well, what it says about New Labour is that they haven't got a clue. I mean, they have walked straight onto this punch with no plan B. And that's what I'm a member of the Labour Party still, for God knows why. But they've really failed to understand what's at stake here. And I'm afraid that the current government is looking completely punch drunk.
What do you think this says about Gordon Brown's reputation?
Well, I mean, his reputation for sitting on top of a bubble and watching it blow up, and then that was his reputation. And now the bubble's burst, he's going to take the blame. It's not really his fault. He's a cipher. I mean, in previous generations, Labour prime ministers would have had a grip on this stuff. But, I mean, what's sad about him, he's quite an intelligent guy, but he's just bought all this rubbish years ago, and now it's coming home to haunt him.
Seeing as by the opinion polls it looks like Cameron's going to win the next election, we could have George Osborne picking up the pieces. What do you think of him?
I think they've got even less of a clue than New Labour. I mean, the problem with New Labour is they've got no clue. Then the problem, because they've accepted the previous Thatcherite consensus, and that's the problem. The only people who've got some ideas that which are sensible, that Vince Cable and the Liberal Democrats have come up with some ideas for regulating banks' behaviour and so on. But as I said to you earlier, that's like shutting the stable door after the horse has bolted. Of course we should be regulating banks' behaviour. We should always have been regulating bank banks' behaviour in stock markets, you know. But by letting them have their head, that's exactly what this problem is. That's exactly what's caused this problem. They should have been under control.
So should we nationalise the banks instead and let the state take control?
Well, the banks will be nationalised, inevitably. Both Northern Rock and Bear Stearns in the United States of America, Bear Stearns has been nationalised, whatever they want to say, it's been nationalised by the... What will happen is the taxpayer will now have to step up to the pad and bail out the banking system, and that's what's already happening, $70 billion for Northern Rock. In my view, I would follow Milton Friedman, the free marketeers. I'd say if a bank goes bust, let it go bust. Just let it go bust, and we won't buy it for 70 billion quid, we'll buy it for nothing. We'll take over the whole infrastructure, the ATMs, the whole of the actual physical infrastructure of the banking system will fall into the hands of the state, because in actual fact, they're bankrupt. The problem is what we're going to do with it when we've got it.
Yeah, because isn't there a bit of a contradiction if the people that are in charge of the political system are clearly not fully, you know, they've not got to grips with clearly what's going on. So if the banks do fall into the hands of the state, who's to say that they will be able to run it any better than a free market system?
Well, it's damage limitation and crisis management, just like in the 1930s. And of course, don't forget, it's not just about economics, there's also a world war. You know, that's going to force the issue in terms of people are going to have to get their act together and get in charge of this whole setup. This is the most dangerous time we've been living through since 1939, no doubt about it.
People will obviously have very graphic images of the 30s, people going to banks with huge cartloads of stacks of notes worth absolutely nothing whatsoever, a loaf of bread at most. Apart from obviously people getting kicked out of the houses and possibly more people on the streets, what is this going to mean for people, you know, like me? I'm on a sort of fairly minimum wage sort of job. I'm an administrator, you know, I live my life. What's going to happen?
Well, I mean, everybody will be forced. I mean, I don't think there's going to be starvation in countries like Britain. We'll stop going to the pub before we stop eating. But of course, it's already happening all over the world, in Haiti and the Philippines, places like that. People are rioting because the price of rice and bread has doubled in the last 6 months. Now, that may not bother most people who are wealthy, but of course, from the half the world's population who are poor, if your daily bowl of rice doubles in price, that's absolutely catastrophic. Mm. And we're already seeing it. So in poor countries, there's going to be famine. There's going to be hunger. In rich countries like this, people are just going to have to get used to the idea that, you know, life is not a bowl of cherries.
Right. So when do you think this crash is going to happen? I mean, is it going to start in the United States as it was in the last century, or possibly China?
It could come. I mean, they're hoping that China and India will somehow hold up the world economy. But I think that's delusionary. We're all in one world economy now. The Chinese economy is overheating, just as the US economy is, and it could come from just about anywhere. The government has been intervening to try and prevent the crash, but they're running out of resources. They can't bail out all the banks simultaneously. They just don't have the dosh. I mean, in my view, they will have to let them collapse, as we were saying earlier, and then take them over. But then what to do with it? No, that's the issue.
So really, a lot of unknowns and a time of great tension and lots of waiting then.
I think before the end of the year, it'll be fairly clear where we're going.
All right. Well, Martin Summers, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Or go onto our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
It's the 60th anniversary of the State of Israel. And amongst the celebrations, many voices have been raised questioning the mass migration of millions of European Jews to populate Israel and the displacement of many hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. Many doubts are being raised too as to whether European Jews' biblical claims on Palestine are legitimate. Pacifica Radio in California helped host an 18-hour special entitled Radio Free Palestine, which was syndicated on radio stations throughout the world. The only radio station in the UK that transmitted it was Resonance FM, London's community station. Anyway, here is a glimpse of a Palestinian perspective on the 60 years of Israeli rule.
The Beturin refugee says, it's been 60 years.
2008 is the 60th anniversary of al-Nakba, the catastrophe.
It happened in Palestine.
That's when Israel forced nearly 1 million Palestinians out of their homes. Massacred hundreds of Palestinians, destroyed hundreds of their villages and towns, and declared the creation of the State of Israel.
So, Israel is there, and I'm here carrying a Palestinian flag.
So this coming week is going to be a celebration of Palestinian existence, a commemoration of the catastrophe that we have been through as a people, and to proclaim loudly, no celebration for apartheid, Palestinian refugees will return.
This micro 1 hour documentary special produced by the Pacifica Radio Network is a Sankofa, looking back so we can move forward to mark 60 years of dispossession on the 60th anniversary of
al-Nakba, Arabic word for the catastrophe.
Today, we are celebrating the existence and the continuation of the Palestinian people to prove that they are the owner of the land.
Mixing speeches, interviews, songs and spoken word, survivors' testimonies from Palestine and the diaspora, discussing contemporary advancement projects in Palestine and around the world. It looks at the Nakba in its regional context and reflects on its impact, shaping the current geopolitics of the region.
The Nakba is a colonizing process. It was armed by the British.
The paramilitary Zionist forces cleansed the land of its indigenous Palestinians.
Even before Israel declared itself a state, it had an army, it had a navy, it had an air force.
They claimed that the Arabs wanted to throw them in the sea, but they threw us in the desert.
Today, we are celebrating the existence and the continuation of the Palestinian people to prove that they are the owner of the land.
It's a collaboration between Voices with Vision on WPFW, the DC Radio Co-op.org in DC and Palestine, Radio Intifada, and the SWANA, South and West Asia and North Africa Collective in KPFKLA, Flashpoints in Berkeley and Palestine, Arab Voices and Open Journal in KPFT, Houston, Texas, Badil, IMEMC, the International Middle East Media Collective, WBIX and WBAI in New York, and CKUT, Radio Montreal in Canada.
Many people should seek to be a subject of history and not only an object of history. And I believe that making history is extremely important. But I also believe that explaining history and disseminating one's version of history is of equal importance.
They are talking about Israel's achievements this week. Well, let's discuss Israel's achievements. How to build apartheid walls, how to learn torture methods and spread them around the world, how to imprison a population and use surveillance on them day and night, how to implement military rule and how to repress an oppressed people. How to occupy a population that 60 years later are still refusing to give up and still continue to fight for our right to return.
And we cannot expect the American government and Congress and Senate to take proper decisions unless there is some kind of public pressure. That's why Palestinians need to establish networks with American organizations. That's why it is so crucial to bring the reality and the facts to the American public as much as we can. I think the American public are entitled to know the truth, and the media is not doing its job in this regard. On the contrary, I think the truth is misrepresented about the situation in the Middle East and especially in Palestine.
With known experts, Palestinian politicians, elder survivors of the Nakba and their children and grandchildren, former detainees, reporters, activists, artists and artivists such as Rafif Ziyada, Nasir Aruri, Jess Ghannam, the Foti family, Farid Bitar, Suher Hamad, Tawfiq Siadi, Lucy Murphy, Jadal of Palestine, Headrock, Dan and Hamad El Farra, and the Slingshot Hip Hop Slang, the children of the Holy Land Trust, the Arab Summit at the Free Palestine Concert in San Francisco. Fairuz Marcel Khalifa, Ambassador Afifi, the former head of the Palestinian mission in Washington, D.C.
The leaders of the gang who led the Deir Yassin massacre became prime ministers, and one of them received the Nobel Peace Prize, Menachem Begin.
In this part of the world, it's still not understood that the Israeli presence, the Israeli rejection of resolutions of the General Assembly, the failure of Israel to leave the Palestinian lands and abide by the rules of the United Nations, is still the major block to peace in the Middle East.
Dennis Halliday, the former UN Assistant Secretary General, Mustafa Barghouti, former presidential candidate of Palestine, Suhad Abuse of the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation, Ramil Amin and Left Turn magazine, Julia Nasser, Kristen S., Nasser Faris, Jenka Soderberg of KBU and IMEMC, Leila Haddad of Free Speech Radio News, and major help from Gretchen King, the Balozi Productions, George Rashmawi, Noura Barros Friedman, Sherna Berger Cluck, Naji Mujahid, Fred Nguyen, Desmond Leary, Drew Poe, Tony Gunnivan, Oscar Fernandez, Asma Hamarni, and Nathan Moore.
They haven't ethnically cleansed us totally.
This is a mature show for a mature audience of all ages. Call your friends, listen carefully, and take an action for change.
We are still struggling significantly and proudly to reclaim our rights on our historic land.
Tackling the main issues, which are Jerusalem, refugees, borders, settlements, and not to waste time in interim and partial deals.
And our attempt is to reclaim our history, our land, and our right to live with freedom and self-determination in historic Palestine.
The establishment of a true Palestinian viable state and not just canto stands in a form that is actually becoming an apartheid.
1 hour documentary special, part of an 18-hour international broadcast, IMEMC.org and CKUT.ca.
60 years after the Nakba, the catastrophe, as the Palestinians call it.
An extract there from Radio Free Palestine, broadcast to mark the 60th anniversary of the State of Israel. And you can keep up with what's going on in Palestine and Israel with regular podcasts from the International Middle East Centre at www.immec.org. And now we're going to hear Dolores Keane, and this is Solid Ground.
Didn't they know? Now we Children, it's the land you cannot own. The land owns you. It's the land, it is our wisdom. It's the land, it shines us through. It's the land that feeds our children. It's the land you cannot own. The land owns you.
That was from a CD called Irish Music, The Rough Guide, and that was Dolores Keane.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
There has still not been any inquiry into the London bombings of the 7th of July 2005. Many questions being put forward by relatives of the victims, survivors and AIR families, as well as investigative journalists and researchers, still remain unanswered. One of the first researchers to get on the case after 7/7 was Dave Starbuck from Revelation Tapes in Walsall near Birmingham. Dave got a call from a lady, whom he calls Miss X to protect her identity, who says she was catching a train from Luton Station into London King's Cross at the same time as the four alleged bombers. So here's Dave interviewing her.
Thank you.
Miss X, who says she was travelling into London from Luton at the same time as the four alleged bombers, being interviewed there by Dave Starbuck at Revelation Tapes. You can hear more Dave at www.revelationaudiovisual.com.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Time for our What's On guide, Mr. Jeff Sparks, to give us some of his own personal poetry.
Thank you, John. This is a poem that was written by George Gordon Byron, who at the age of 10 became Lord Byron. He was an English poet and a leading figure in Romanticism. This is a poem titled She Walks in Beauty. She walks in beauty like the night, of cloudless climes and starry skies, and all that's best of dark and bright meet in her aspect and her eyes, thus mellowed to that tender light which heaven to gaudy day denies. One shade the more, one ray the less, had half impaired the nameless grace which waves in every raven tress, or softly lightens o'er her face, where thoughts serenely sweet express how pure, how dear their dwelling place. And on that cheek, and o'er that brow, so soft, so calm, yet eloquent, the smiles that win, the tints that glow, but tell of days in goodness spent, a mind at peace with all below, a heart whose love is innocent.
Thank you, Jeff. We're now going to hear an extract from a book called Strange Conflicts by our producer, Tony Gosling.
Actually, I didn't write the book, John. It's from the closing paragraphs of a book called Strange Conflict by Dennis Wheatley, which was first published by Hutchinson in 1941. This is from Chapter 12, The Great God Pan, spoken by Wheatley's protagonist, the Monseigneur le Duc de Richelieu, Knight of the Most Exalted Order of the Golden Fleece. The Duke is addressing his friends, Simon Aaron, Mary Lou, Rex Van Ryn and Richard Eaton, who he's just helped to rescue from a Nazi voodoo priest who's been remote viewing Britain's vital Atlantic convoy routes. Whether or not Hitler and Mussolini themselves are great masters of black magic, nobody can possibly contest that it's through such ambitious and unscrupulous men, German, Italian and Japanese, that the powers of darkness are working, and in recent years have acquired such a terrifying increase of strength upon our earth. The New World Order which they wish to bring about is but another name for hell. If through them evil prevailed, every man and woman of every race and colour would finally be enslaved, from the cradle to the grave. They would be brought up to worship might instead of right, and would be taught to condone, or even praise, murder, torture, and the suppression of all liberty as necessary to the welfare of the state. Incontestable proof of that has already been given us by the way in which the young Nazi-educated Germans have behaved in Poland, Czechoslovakia, Norway, Holland, Belgium and France. They butchered old men, women and children who did not even seek to oppose them. That was part of the plan, and they obeyed the order to commit these murders in cold blood without a single recorded instance of any protest against them by officers or men. 7 years of the totalitarian poison has been enough for the evil to grip 5 million German youths, and with it their hearts have gone cold and stony. If they triumph, within 70 years, such words as justice, toleration, freedom and compassion will have ceased to have a place in the vocabularies of the races of mankind. In the New World Order, all family life will be at an end, except for the conquerors, and only the worst elements, spiritually, will be allowed to procreate fresh generations to populate a world divided into masters and slaves. The right to homes and children of their own would be reserved to the overlords. The rest would be herded into barracks and reduced to the level of robots, without the right to read or speak or even think for themselves. There could be no revolt, because every officer, priest, deputy, editor, magistrate, writer, and other leader of free thought and action in the conquered countries would already have been executed by the firing squads, and leaderless herds cannot prevail against tanks, tear gas, bombs, and machine guns. And unless men are free, how can they progress upon the great spiritual journey which all must make? This war is not for territory or gain or glory, but that Armageddon which was prophesied of old. That is why all the children of light, wherever they may be, captive or free, must hold on to their spiritual integrity as never before and must stick at nothing physically in the fight, lest the whole world fall under the domination of these puppets who are animated by the powers of darkness. As he ceased speaking, they knew that although it would be many days before their burns, wheals, and wounds were healed, there had come into their hearts a little glow of warmth. The battle was still far from being over, but they'd done the thing which they'd set out to do. Their victory was an episode, no more, in the titanic struggle that was in progress, but the flame which animated their spirits was burning all the brighter for it, and they were returning to fight on for the England that they loved. It seemed that the Duke guessed their thoughts, for he spoke again. As long as Britain stands, the powers of darkness cannot prevail. On earth, the English race is the last guardian of the light, and I have unshakable conviction that, come what may, our island will prevail and prove the dark bulwark of the world.
Well, interesting, that book was published only in 1941, and how much it prophesied that people would discover about what the Nazi regime really meant.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Well, now I think it's time for our What's On Guide with Jeff Sparks. What's going on, Jeff?
Thank you, John. Good evening. This is your What's On Guide from Dialect Radio. Let's kick things off with Friday, 23rd of May, and at the Carlin Academy in Bristol, the recently reformed Bradford-based Rockers at Terror Vision will be performing. Tickets are £17.50 in advance, and doors open at 6:30 p.m. Also on 23rd of May, in this time at the Cooler in Park Street, Bristol, Riot Noise will be performing with support from Casino Drive. Now, we'll point out that for those who remember a group called Red Top Matches, well, three members of that group are now in Riot Noise. Doors open at 9:30 p.m. and entry is £4 on the door. On to a song of the week, and I feature a group from Newport in South Wales called Skindred. Now, this group mixed together elements of heavy metal, punk, hip-hop and reggae, and it's become a style known by bands and fans alike as ragga metal or ragga punk. This is from their latest album titled Roots Rock Riot, and it's a track titled Rude Boy for Life. That was Skindred with the track Rude Boy for Life from their recent album Roots Rock Riot. For more information on them, you can check out www.myspace.com/skindred or www.skindred.com. Moving on to Saturday 24th of May, and at the Old Tavern in Bristol, the nine-piece ska group The Communicators will be performing. The gigs will start around 9 p.m. and entry is free. On Sunday 25th of May at Mr. Wolf's in Bristol, there is the Jungle Boogie Summer Festival. This event starts at 4 p.m. and goes on right through to 4 a.m. An entry is £5 on the door for early birds, and features not only face painters and circus performers, but DJs at the Asbo Disco and also Ewan Who's Army, plus acts such as Katie Brooks, Cute Looney and the Rinky Dinks. It also seems to be fancy dress as well, and the theme is animals. Finally, on the 25th of May at the Golden Lion at 244 Gloucester Road in Bristol, it's the 10th Granary Reunited event, featuring music from the many DJs who were at the Granary Club. Doors open at 8 p.m. and entry is free. That is all from me. Thanks for listening and have a great week. Take care and goodbye.
Well, thank you, Jeff. And there you have it. No excuse to stay inside being boring.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Staff Sergeant Jimmy Massey left the US Marines after serving in Iraq, and he was invited to talk about his view of the Iraq conflict on Venezuela TV.
We will stay in Iraq until we bleed the Iraqis of all of their oil. And then we will move to Iran, Syria, and whoever else we think has oil or has natural resources that we can rape.
Do you think they would go so far as to take Venezuela's oil by force?
This is World War III. There are no rules. The rules went out the window September 11th.
Is this just your personal thing, or did someone actually tell you this as your time as a soldier?
My 12 years of intelligence briefings within the U.S. Marine Corps has led me to believe one thing. The U.S. has a quest for global domination. Marines are gangsters for capitalism. I say for all the people here in Venezuela that do not believe in President Chavez, you better start believing. The wolf is north of you. The media within the United States has blinded the American people. And the number one person that has blinded the Americans with propaganda is Bill O'Reilly, Fox News. Mr. O'Reilly is supposedly Irish, but I think he's more fascist.
How many ex-soldiers are in your organization?
We have approximately 600 active members that speak worldwide. And we have 2,000 members that are in reserve that are waiting for the revolution. The revolution has already began. It's just, when are we going to take it to the White House?
You're saying 600 soldiers that are already withdrawn, or are there still some that are active?
The 600 are already withdrawn, and a lot of the 2,000 are members that are still within the U.S. military. And we have members that even work within the National Security Agency in Maryland. We are surrounding them. It simplifies things.
Well, that was Jimmy Massey there, ex of the US Marines, talking on Venezuela TV. If that caught your ear, then we invite you to have a look at the Iraq Veterans Against the War website, which is www.ivaw.org.
My name's Emily Crick. I work for Transform Drugs Policy Foundation. It's a UK-based think tank campaigning for the legalisation of drugs. Tonight we've been talking about the politics of cocaine. I've been arguing for the legalisation of cocaine.
And many people would think that that would be a disaster because it would make what is actually a dangerous drug freely available.
We would argue that it wouldn't be a free-for-all, that drugs would be controlled and regulated. So, for example, perhaps cocaine would be available through a pharmacy. So you'd have to go and meet with someone that is medically trained in order to assess how assess your need for cocaine. We also argue that it would be have to be very strictly regulated, so that underage sales would be regulated, prohibited, that health warnings would be given out, and that any money that will be made would go into the health and treatment of cocaine addicts.
So, as a campaign, does Transform think that there really is no good reason why cocaine specifically is illegal?
No, we don't think there's any good reason why cocaine is illegal.
Okay. What about other drugs? We've seen at the moment that there's just been a change with the Association of Chief Police Officers successfully lobbying the Home Secretary, Jackie Smith, to increase cannabis to a Class B drug, which makes it a more serious offence. Is that something you would agree with at Transform?
Absolutely not. Cannabis is one of the less dangerous drugs, so we would argue that it shouldn't be in the same class as amphetamines, for example, and that it shouldn't be in a higher class than ketamine, for example. But what we'd most like, initially, is to change the classification system altogether, because alcohol and tobacco are actually two of the most dangerous drugs, and they are legal.
The thing is with say, for example, tobacco, is it doesn't have the sort of psychological effects, even though, you know, people do get dependent on it. It doesn't have the psychological effects of something like cocaine or heroin.
Absolutely, that's true. And cocaine is one of the harder drugs to talk about within legal regulation because so many people do it and think that it's okay to do, but it is very, very dangerous and very addictive. But we believe that it is far better for dangerous drugs to be controlled and regulated by the government than sold by organised crime.
For many people, drug taking is a kind of chemical high, which maybe gets them around situations which otherwise are difficult to deal with, maybe particularly for homeless people. It gives them a kind of form of chemical comfort. Don't you think, really, that it's really irresponsible to allow people to take that drugs which give them that sort of temporary relief?
I don't think it's any more irresponsible than it is for alcohol to be easily available.
Okay. Finally, whereabouts can we find you on the internet, Transform, and how do people get in touch?
Our website address is www.tdpf.org.uk, but if you typed Transform Drugs Policy Foundation into a search engine, you'd find us. Get involved. Write your MP.
Well, that's all for this week's show. Dialect is a community internet radio station broadcast on the web at dialectradio.co.uk and on BTFM 93.2 in the Bristol area. The show is run by the Bristol Broadband Co-op, and that means anyone can contribute. That means you sat at home or driving in your car. So if you'd like to, either in reporting or on the engineering side, or maybe you're not sure and you just want to come along and see what we do, get in touch by calling Volunteering Bristol on 0117 989 7733. Or you can find them on the web at www.bristolvolunteers.org.uk. Thank you for Martin Summers for coming in today and talking about the credit crunch. The reporters this week were Tony Gosling, and Jeff Sparks did the What's On Guide. The studio production was done by Villiers Chepchikurin, and the producer was Tony Gosling. That was Dialect Radio, and this is John Peters Coleman wishing you a very good week. So from the Queen Square studio in Bristol, from the Dalek team, have fun, goodbye for now, see you again next week.